Welcome to another episode of Thoughts of a Techno Wizard. It is April Friday, April 7th, 2023. Goodness, that's what I was missing my brain right now. 12:24 p.m. And you can probably hear my voice. I'm just kind of stressed right now, kind of overwhelmed, so this might probably be a short podcast with me just venting. I'm not even sure if I'm going to release this one, but I tend to get into these moments where I'm just constantly thinking about, you know, whatever's stressing me out over and over and over again, like a computer stuck in a loop. I think it's useful to, you know, to express those things. But I also feel bad if I, like, try to express those things with, you know, my partner or my folks or whatever, because I feel like they all have their own problems, and that just, it just doesn't feel good to get too much into detail with all that. And I try to somewhat, because I do think it is, you know, useful and important to be vulnerable with your loved ones. I do that to some extent, but it's still, even when you're trying to do that, even when at least I am trying to do that, it's really difficult to be, you know, more specific or to think of certain things, right? Because you're, at least for myself, I'm constantly thinking about, oh, what are their concerns? You know, am I coming off a certain way or whatever? But when I'm podcasting, I don't really care, you know. People may or may not listen to this. There's nobody in front of me. I'm not looking at anybody's eyes, trying to match their energy and things like that. So you know, it's kind of easier to just fully express what I'm feeling and thinking. But yeah, anyways, it's been terribly frustrating dealing with this freaking vehicle. Again, like, I am grateful for the fact that I was able to, you know, get a vehicle. Because like I mentioned before, I was able to afford a new or even used car. Because I had no credit. And a number of other things. But yeah, it is what it is. But it's just so frustrating, the fact that every month I feel like I'm having to pay a bunch of monies out of pocket to make repairs. I can't, like, skip out on those repairs, because otherwise I'd be, you know, stuck somewhere. Or worse, you know, getting to some accident. So it's just really, really annoying in that part. And to really, that's an understatement. It's extremely frustrating. And it's directed, you know, at this freaking system, right? Like, it makes no sense that, you know, even though I technically do make enough money to afford a newer vehicle, because, you know, I didn't know about credit and building credit my entire life, I can't really, you know, buy a vehicle unless I'm going to pay a bunch of it with cash. But I don't have that much money, right? Like, I can't do spending cash and stuff like that. And I can't really save up, because every month I'm having to pay for these, you know, unexpected expenses. So it's like a catch 22 there. It's just stupid, quite frankly. And maybe I'm stupid, right? Maybe I'm, you know, not knowledgeable enough about what repairs are important, or how to get a good deal, or how to find a good loan, or this, that, and the other, whatever. Maybe I am stupid. And I don't dismiss that. That could be a possibility, but there's not, unfortunately, not much I can do about that, right? Like, I do as much research as I can, try to research on different financing options and what to repair, what not to repair, this, that, and the other, but there's no real guidelines, you know, on this stuff. At least not really. A lot of this stuff, like, for repairs, is like, oh yeah, you gotta fix that or you'll die, you know? Not literally, but, you know, they often, you know, ham it up. And again, it might be rightfully so, because, like, The repairs I had, like the biggest repair I had to do in the last couple of weeks was the freaking brakes and rotors and one of the axles, right? So those are pretty important things. If they went wrong while I was driving, it's kind of game over. And that was exceedingly expensive, kind of put me back quite a ways. And, you know, now I have to fix the spark plugs because I felt it jumping when I was driving and stuff like that. And it's just like, now the airbag light was going on, and I can't, there's no way, you know, to really fix that myself or even have this mobile repairman fix it, who I usually call because he's way less expensive and he does good work. Then taking it to the dealership, but the dealership is pretty much the only one that can even look at the airbag stuff and make sure that's, you know, not going to deploy me while I'm driving or something like that, like, or not deploy if I get in an accident, like, all right, so, just one thing after another, and it's really stupid that we, again, live in a world where, you know, you're stuck between multiple bad choices. Alright. That's why I really hate it when people are like, oh yeah, just make the right decision. Spend better or save money, this, that, and the other, right? Like, it's not that simple, right? Like, oftentimes many of us are put in situations where there are no good choices. And you just get further and further into debt or into trouble or whatever. And if even if somebody else was able to see a better choice, that's somebody else, right? And the only reason why that somebody else can see that other choice is likely because they have those options, right? They have different opportunities or access to other resources that other folks like myself may not have. And it's exceedingly frustrating. Like, I would love to be able to talk to a personal finance person or car person that can really tell me my specific situation, right? Like, I look up some stuff online. This is a site called Car Edge, is pretty good, or Edmunds, and I'm, you know, doing research on cars to get, or this, that, and the other, how to finance. But it's like very general, right? It's meant to apply to anybody's situation, but it doesn't necessarily apply to my situation, right? And in order for me to, you know, get more specific information, you have to pay them. Again, you could say rightfully so, sure, but that does mean that I can't afford that service, right? I can't get that information. I can't, you know, get that help because of my limitations in finances, among other things. So this is why, you know, I wanted to share this metaphor I came up with for capitalism. Right, I'm always looking at different ways to communicate to people the problems with the system. Right, this one I'm pretty interested. I think it's pretty useful, hopefully. But I think capitalism is like fire. or really, there's two metaphors. I might get to another one, but in many ways, capitalism is like fire. In that, you know, just like fire, it is inherently not good. Right, it's pretty harmful by default, and you can easily see that because by default fire harms, right? Fire burns things, like that's what fire does. It's the whole point. But you can get good stuff from it, right? You can get heat, you can get light, a number of other things, all the things that we've gotten. However, you don't only need those things. Like, those are not the only ways to get those things. Like, heat and light, you can also get those from rubbing your hands together, or from, you know, electricity, or from the sun, or from, you know, many other sources can give you these same things. And I think that's similar with capitalism, right? Many people assume that free markets and, you know, decentralization or whatever, even though it's not really decentralization, comes from capitalism, but it doesn't, right? Just like light and heat does not, you know, is not solely due to fire. We get those from a lot of other places. Similarly, you know, free markets and all this other stuff that we enjoy, competition, whatever, right? All that can be had from other sources, from other economic systems. But, you know, to continue the metaphor, just like with fire, if you just let it go, it will burn everything in sight until it can't burn anymore, until there's nothing else to burn. Similarly for capitalism, it will capitalize everything in sight. It will exploit everything in sight, right? As much as it can until there's nothing left to capitalize, to commoditize. And that's extremely, you know, problematic, of course. But, you know, with fire, it kind of just exists, right? It doesn't even necessarily try to grow itself, per se. Like, it doesn't serve itself. It's just, you know, it happens. It can happen naturally. You can make a fire, you can start it, and it is what it is. So this is why I come up with a second metaphor, and that capitalism is like viruses, right? Like a virus, it's not necessarily alive, but it does have a life of its own in a way, right? In that it parasitizes off of other life forms in order to continue its existence. All right, there we go. Sorry, somebody called me for a second. Forgot exactly where I was, but yeah. Capitalism is also like a virus. Because unlike fire that just kind of exists, and yes, it is kind of bad by default, but it can be used very, very successfully, very productively. If you use it carefully, right? That's the other side. You have to use it carefully. You can't just throw something on the fire and expect it to be fine, or just light things on fire and expect it to be fine. You have to carefully manage and see where you want to apply that fire and how to apply it, and where, you know, all this other stuff. Get the proper constraints to it, right? And yes, this is a bit of a positive view on capitalism, because before I like to say, oh yeah, capitalism is terrible all the way around. And I do very much still believe that, but I'm open to the consideration that there are some positives that you can get from, you know, capitalism to some extent, but only if it's like fire, and that we very carefully figure out, you know, where to use it, how to apply it, this, that, and the other, right? You don't just say, oh yeah, fire, you can get good stuff from fire, put everything on fire. Like, no. Yes, you can get good things from fire, but you recognize that fire is inherently dangerous, and therefore you have to put it in a specific constraints in order to get the benefits from it, right? I think that same thing has happened in the last couple hundred years, right? Like, we've gotten some, yes, you can probably say you've gotten some benefits from fire, I mean from capitalism, but it's not really clear, right, what specific benefits that we've gotten from capitalism. And if anything, what is clear is that the danger that capitalism provides, that capitalism, you know, enforces or creates, right, we definitely have suffered those, right? But it's not clear what benefits that we've gotten specifically from capitalism. Just like fire, people like to say, oh, you know, we got warmth and life from fire, right? Yes, but we got warmth and light from the sun, right? Which is not fire, it's plasma, you know? we got it from being close to each other, right? You got, you know, all these other sources of light and warmth and all this other stuff that you may get from fire are applicable, if not more so, to other sources than it is to fire. So similarly with capitalism, we have to ask ourselves, what exactly have we got from capitalism? And how do we know we got it from there instead of other systems, right? A lot of the benefits that people like to ascribe to, for instance, America, right? To the successes in America is not because of capitalism. It's because of socialism, right? Because of socialistic practices, right? The entire idea of electricity, right? The fact that we have so much infrastructure is not due to capitalism. It's due to, you know, the military wanting to have roads everywhere. It's due to, you know, the New Deal wanting to provide electricity to the rural areas. It's due to, you know, civil rights movements and things like that, right? Like, it's due to so many other things aside from capitalism, right? But yeah, going back to the virus metaphor, capitalism is much like a virus in that it serves itself. Right, fire doesn't necessarily serve itself, right? It can grow, and, you know, grow out of bounds and, you know, get crazy. But it can very easily just whittle out very quickly. But viruses, right, are specifically created or specifically adapted, I should say, and that's a good word to use, right? It's adapted to grow as much as it possibly can, right? It's adapted to not just in order to grow, it's adapted to evolve, or rather to adapt itself, right? To deceive, to exploit, to go inside of a biological creature, right? And exploit that creature's structure and abilities and life, right? Cells and all this other stuff, right? In order for it to grow it's not DNA, it's, I think, RNA that most viruses have, but yeah, to grow its genetic material, right? To spread its genetic material. So it's has a self-reinforcing mechanisms within the very structure of viruses, and which makes it, you know, have a life of its own, even though it's technically not alive per se, right? That's similar with capitalism, right? It feels like it's sort of alive, in that, you know, there's the invisible hand of the market, that bullcrap, but it really just has it's really just adapted to spread its genetic material, its cultural material in this case, right? Which is capitalism. It has the tools within the structure of capitalism to constantly exploit other resources, to deceive them, to mask itself as them in order to spread itself. And that is the major danger of capitalism, right? However, just like viruses, we can learn from those viruses, right? We can figure out what they do right and what they do wrong, what makes them dangerous, what makes them so, you know, yeah, like I said, so dangerous, so efficient, if you will, at spreading its genetic material, in order to copy some of those things. But we don't do so blindly, right? We say, okay, we like that part, we don't like that part, and if we want to, you know, improve or strengthen certain parts of, for instance, our own immune systems or our medicinal, you know, abilities, then we're going to try to replicate this ability or that ability and not the rest, right? We have to pick and choose exactly what we want to copy, right? Bacteriophages, for instance. I'm not sure if that is that. I don't think that's a virus, or is it a bacteria? I'm not sure. But it provides a template, right? An example of how we can try to use it, get some benefit from this very terrible and scary thing. And I think if you want to make any argument whatsoever that capitalism provides some sort of good value, provides some sort of, you know, productive things and good stuff, right? Then this is the only argument that really makes sense, right? And that, you know, I just wanted to play around with the idea because it just came to me one day. I was like, oh yeah, this could be useful. Because I do think there's a lot of people who so easily make the mistake of attributing all the success, or at least all the supposed development that we've gotten today in 21st century life, to capitalism, even though it's demonstrably, you know, not really due to capitalism. There's many other things that create, you know, the good stuff that we enjoy. And at the same time, they also ignore the dangers, right? They ignore the fact that it has, by and large, burned much of our landscape, right? They just ignore it. It's like watching a forest fire, and just and after it's done, or even while it's going, be like, huh, I don't know what's going on there. Must be nature. Right? It's not so bad. Even though, yes, they're good, there is some good that comes from it, you still don't want that forest fire to get out of control, right? You don't want it to be burning down every single forest, burning down your house, right, in the middle of the forest, choking everybody that's around the area, right? If you see a forest fire, you don't sit down and be like, oh yeah, that's nice. Like, no, you become very vigilant. You're like, yes, even though there may be some benefits from this, you have to make sure it doesn't go too far, it doesn't kill people, you know, it doesn't destroy more than what you expected and all this other stuff, right? And you don't want to start random forest fires, right? Because that, again, it gets out of hand. So similar with capitalism, just because you may see some benefits from it, doesn't mean you should just be like, oh yeah, just everywhere, put it everywhere. Like, because no, there's very clear and obvious dangers and problems with the system. And you have to be very, very careful about how you apply it. And in fact, this same metaphor, right, can probably be applied to dangerous technologies like AI, right? Now, this is not meant to be an AI thing, a video or podcast, goodness. So I'm not going to get into that, but just recognize the fact that, yeah, we're creating a technology that can quickly get out of hand and can become completely unpredictable. But I will say real quick, because this is now on my mind, I do think the way that many people are seeing this, especially some AI safety folks, are saying, oh, it's like the reason why we can't open source it, because it's like everybody has a nuke, right? You don't want everybody to have a nuke, but it's not a nuke, right? Because with the nuke, it's a very clear and present danger. It's very obvious that it's a bomb, right? And a bomb does what a bomb does. It kills everything. It explodes everything. It's clear what the danger is. And so clearly, you know that not everybody should have access to this dangerous thing, right? But even with that, you can make the argument that it would be better if more people have not the ability to make nukes per se, but the ability to protect from nukes. So to better understand what danger nukes provide and to try and develop, you know, protections against that. I don't think a nuke is the best protection for another nuke, because it only takes one crazy person or, you know, some leader that no longer cares anymore to be like, yeah, I'm just going to hit it anyways, right? Because you got to remember that there was like two or three occasions in history in the last couple of decades that we've all could have died. But for some very, very, brave or just lucky people who are like, you know what, let's not do this. And I don't think that's a good, you know, razor edge to stand on. But if more people had the ability to study nukes and to figure out if we can develop some sort of massive shield or, you know, protection from nukes, I think that would be pretty beneficial. But anyways, the point here that I really wanted to talk about, that just came to mind, is the fact that you can't say AI is like nukes and therefore, you know, close who has access to it or limit who has access to it, because AI provides, or AI is not a clear danger. We have no idea what will actually happen if we actually create an artificial intelligence, right? And specifically an artificial general intelligence that is super intelligent, that is smarter than every human being combined, right? We have no idea what will actually happen. Any theories, ideas around it is theories, right? And not even theories, they're more hypotheses, right? They're us trying to imagine what this might be. And that doesn't mean that, you know, we have, there's nothing we can do about it, right? Because you can very much imagine, you know, bad things and therefore create some regulations against that or be prescriptive, right? That's not the right word. Be proactive with, you know, avoiding some of those negative consequences, right? Like when you're designing, for instance, a new technology, you go ahead and imagine what might happen if this is, you know, used incorrectly, or, you know, if this is used in ways that you don't expect, or, you know, any number of things. And the best way to do that is to, you know, test it in a very small, you know, subset to see how people use this thing, but also to try and use some examples of similar things that, of course, is not exactly what you just built, but is somewhat similar, right? That can give shed some light. And so with AI, what we can do is figure out some of the similar things, right? What's similar to that is the onset of computing and internet in general. The fact that we've created, you know, technologies that allow certain people to have greater access to technologies that allow them to be more productive and more, in some ways, more intelligent, right? In specific narrow fields than everybody else. What happened there? Monopolization of power, right? Creation of these monopolies, these big tech companies. It created more inequality. And yes, it has created some interesting products and technologies, but a lot of those products and technologies are in themselves, you know, not necessarily purely good, right? Like even things like computers and smartphones, right? I mentioned this before. We like to say, oh yeah, smartphones are great, but are they really? What are the pros and benefits, right? Many people even you yourself, like that's listening to this, might say, yes, smartphones are nice, but they can also be extremely distracting, right? They can also be extremely isolating. It can also be extremely problematic. So just because we created a technology that allows us to do things that we've never done before, doesn't mean it's necessarily good, right? We have to kind of put aside this simple idea of one-dimensional good and bad, right? As I mentioned, like with fire, there's multiplicities around any idea of good and bad, right? Fire might be quote unquote bad in and of itself because it harms things by default, but as I've mentioned, there's a lot of good that you can have from it, right? So similar to smartphones, you can easily make an argument that is quote unquote good by default because it connects people together. It doesn't necessarily do harm, you know, just by its existence, right? But there's a lot of bad that can come from it. So similarly with AI, we know that it will be a development of technology. We know that it will be a kind of exponential growth of many types of technologies that we have today. And so we have to also be very cognitive of the fact that it will most likely also, you know, grow the inequalities that we see today, grow the power gaps and the powers that big tech companies have, right? Because that is the pattern that we can see. We don't have much of an idea of what would happen if you have a super intelligent thing, but we do have an idea of what will look like if you have a somewhat intelligent thing that seems to be smarter than most other people, right? For example, a database, right? An algorithm, a super computer. We know what happens when people have access to that. They create big tech companies. And those big tech companies, especially if they're profit-minded, and they all are, right, ends up exploiting other people and, you know, all this other stuff. So you can't just assume that an AI will, you know, not exploit people, especially since they're developed in an environment in which is built on the very nature of exploiting people and resources, right? So yeah, all that to say that this is why, once again, I do think it makes more sense to open source AI as much as possible, right? And I don't, when I say open source, I don't just mean with the technical sense, I mean open access. I mean everybody in the world should have an easy way to understand what the hell AI is and to help either produce their own AI or to, you know, work with others, and most importantly, right, to audit other people's AI, to be able to clearly have some transparency of the AI that other folks are creating and say, okay, this is bad or this is good, or this is the good and bad that can come from this, right? And so this is what I would do, right? Because I know many people will just, you know, cry all day about the idea of open sourcing this technology for many number of reasons, not just safety, but also, you know, profit, which is a bigger concern for many of them. So what I would say instead is at the very least, we should have the ability to open audit any AI system, right? To be able to look at their algorithms, look at their, well, not just look, because you can easily be, oh yeah, you can look right now, because it is API, but no. We need it to be more transparent and more accessible so that non-technical people who may still have good ideas on this can understand what the hell is happening, right? So that means you're going to need new jobs, you're going to need more communicators, people who can understand what the technical side of the AI is and translate that, right, for other people, right? The same way you have, development, or what you call it, technical documentation, right, for, Unity or for many other tech products, so that, you know, a person or YouTube, you know, tutorials for these things, so regular people can be like, how do I make a game, right? They don't have to learn how to, you know, use C# from the jump or C++ or whatever from the jump. They can go online, look at some YouTube tutorials on how Unity works, follow those tutorials, you know, and all this other stuff. We should do that, but on a larger scale for AI. Right? It shouldn't just be up to, you know, just some content creators who feel that, like, they want to do this thing. Don't get me wrong, it's great that some people are doing that. Like, once again, AI Explained, they're great. But we need the companies themselves that are developing these AI to invest in the talent and, you know, the resources to do that themselves, right? They should be able to, that should be part of the auditing process, so that, you know, people can say, okay, this is what they're putting, this is the data they put into that they're using to train this AI, this is how they're training, this is the rewards, the weights, and everything like this, this is what it might create, this is what it has created, this, that, and the other, so people, more and more people can have eyes on this thing, and can say, okay, this is probably not going to go well, oh, this is probably is, and if they disagree, fork, you know, fork the project, so, you know, another person can, work on, you know, like what's happened with Anthropic and OpenAI, right? And again, I know that this is not going to be, you know, what people do, but at the very least, I think advocating for auditing, and then, you know, after that, advocating for open source will be way better than this idea of just stopping development or, you know, stuff like that, because that's just not going to happen. But auditing, I think, can and will happen, and already is sort of happening, but just not with enough intention. But yeah, I'll end it there. I did not mean to go into AI once again. It just constantly comes back to mind, because this is a very important topic these days. But yeah, that's it. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. It did help to talk. Maybe I just like talking about tech stuff, so that helps me as well. I'm not sure if I'm going to share it once again, but I don't know. We'll see, maybe. But yeah, it sucks out here, but we can make it better. As always, I always believe that we can make it better. So yeah. See ya. Have a great day. Bye-bye.